Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Yes, that's the sound of chipping ice, and yes, it's really cold out there, but it's the perfect weather for the Lake Superior Ice Festival. We'll have all the highlights. Plus, the ice around your driveway is a different story, and getting rid of it could harm the environment. We'll hear how to do so responsibly. And he's just released his fourth album of original compositions, and he's 13 years old. We'll catch up with Eddie Ojard. All that in a regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Yes, that's the sound of chipping ice, and yes, it's really cold out there, but it's the perfect weather for the Lake Superior Ice Festival. We'll have all the highlights. Plus, the ice around your driveway is a different story, and getting rid of it could harm the environment. We'll hear how to do so responsibly. And he's just released his fourth album of original compositions, and he's 13 years old. We'll catch up with Eddie Ojard. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So it's the dead of winter. We're barely cracking zero for the high each day. And why do we live here? Because it's the perfect weather for the Lake Superior Ice Festival. A week of so much fun, you won't even notice how cold it is. Here to tell us all about it is Nikki Fermakis from the Lake Superior Ice Festival. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Nikki.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
So I know we have snowbirds here who cut out at the sign of anything white falling from the sky, but is there anywhere else you'd rather be right now?
Well, I would rather be sliding down a snow hill or getting out on an ice carousel or going out and watching some ice racing, all things you can do at the Lake Superior Ice Festival this weekend.
That was a great headline. First of all, where and when is it?
So it starts tonight, Friday, January 28th, 5 o'clock p.m. down at Barker's Island in Superior, and it goes through tomorrow, Saturday, January 29th, also at Barker's Island. But there are also events kind of scattered all around town, too. But again, it starts tonight. We will have Guns N' Hoses Coupe Tournament. So the Superior Fire Department and the Superior Police Department are going to face off playing Coupe against each other. The snow slide is going to be open. It's a big mound of snow right there at Barker's Island that you can come down and just have some fun, relive your childhood, get your kids out there. And then there's also going to be an ice carousel. There's going to be a band just tonight, and there's going to be disc golf. And then going into Saturday, ice sculptures, ice racing, a kids zone with characters. There's just so much going on. There's literally something for everyone, whatever your tastes are, indoor, outdoor. I'm so excited to welcome people to the island.
You are, but you're speaking a foreign language. Coupe, what's that?
So Coupe is a lawn game that includes long wooden sticks that you have to like throw and knock over. And it's actually really cool if you haven't played it before. The gentlemen from Lake Superior Coupe are down there with their yurt, a place where you can, you know, warm up a little bit. And they'll teach you, and they're all decked out in their Scandinavian wear, and they'll teach you how to do the ancient art of throwing wooden blocks to make them fall over.
Okay, it is a foreign language. I think you're the only one on the radio today saying someone will be teaching you Coupe in their yurt. Yeah, and this is, of course, the land of curling, too. So all kinds of interesting things going on that need some introduction to the uninitiated.
So you'll be able to not only just watch and kind of soak it in, but there will be opportunities for you to get a lesson from the experts on Saturday.
All right. What else is going on?
Well, one exciting new element this year is the ice carousel. So I don't know if you're aware of what an ice carousel is, but it's a circular cut in the ice that they put a little motor on and it moves. So there'll be chairs and other things for you to sit on it. You'll be able to bring out, you know, some food or drinks, beverages from the vendors, and you can go out there and just sit on a gently rotating piece of ice in the middle of the bay. It's going to be very fun.
Uh-huh. You know, we seem to have a predilection for cutting holes in ice around here. It's perfectly safe?
Yes, this will be very, very safe. They've, you know, tested it tried and true over the last couple of weeks. We've been very lucky to have some good weather to create the ice for us. And I'm not worried about it. And it's not a huge hole that they cut. They just kind of, you know, do a saw line in a circle. And then they just put a motor on it, and it gently rotates.
Mm-hmm. And where exactly will this be? I'm assuming inside the bay. You don't do it in the open water.
No. It will be over where the Coob and ice rinks are.
We are speaking with Nikki Fermakis of the Lake Superior Ice Festival about the Lake Superior Ice Festival. Ice sculptures, of course, are one of our favorites. They debut during the festival, but they'll be around here for some time afterwards.
Right. Yep. So we will have our, you know, our normals. We'll have an ice throne and some other really cool ice elements that you can take photos with, including the return of our fire and ice sculpture. We'll see who wins this year. Last year, fire won. So we'll see if ice can hold out. but one new element this year is we're going to have ice instruments. So the UW Superior Music Department will be down doing a show using ice instruments.
And you were persuasive enough to get the folks at Crystal Clear Ice to share some of those instruments with us. Here they are with their explanation what we're listening to.
Here's our xylophone. It's going to have color changing lights throughout the night. Here's our snare drum. And then here we have our African rain stick or Australian rain stick. It's filled with beads.
So who's behind this?
Brett Jones from the music department is heading this up, and he's bringing all of his, you know, students and friends over there to come for a wonderful program that you'll be able to enjoy the sounds of ice.
I'm not sure how you could get something like Ray Vaughan Williams' Antarctica Symphony out of that, but if anyone can, Brett Jones and the UWS Music Department can pull it off. Backing up on the ice sculptures, you said fire and ice. How does that work?
So the ice sculptors make this nice, big, huge box that they put a really intricate carving at the very top, and then they fill that box with wood, and then at 4 o'clock, they'll light it with the help of the sterling silver fire twirlers, and then it's just a matter of time to see who's going to win, the fire inside or the ice sculpture itself. And last year was extremely fun to watch because, you know, fire is a very incredible element, but ice is pretty strong too. But last year, fire did win at the very last minute.
What's your prediction, fire or ice?
I am going to vote for ice. I have been doing the prep for this ice festival for 6 months now, so I have an affinity for ice.
All right. Once again, when should we get out there starting today?
The events start at 5 o'clock down at Barker's Island in Superior. They run through 8 o'clock tonight. And then on Saturday, they start around 9 a.m. and events are happening all throughout the day. You can really find something for everyone no matter what time you can get down there. And then it kind of closes out around 6:15 with the big bang. We'll have fireworks. And if you really want to keep the ice festival spirit going, we will have 24 ice sculptures around town with trivia questions attached. There is about a $500 prize associated with it. You can go all around town over the next couple of weeks and check those out. And then there's also going to be an ice bar for as long as it stays frozen at the Spirit Room in Superior.
All right. Nikki Fermakis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Robin.
So now that you know all about the fun you can have on the ice, what can you do to keep it off your driveway without causing a problem for our drinking water and the environment? Leading up to the Ice Festival, it's been Salt Awareness Week in Superior, with experts offering advice and caution about salt on the roads getting into our waterways. I suppose cardiologists might have a thing or two to say about it getting into our coronary system, but a different subject. Here to tell us about it, our Wisconsin Saltwise coordinator, Allison Madison, who joins us from Madison, and the City of Superior's water resource specialist, Megan Hochfeld. Welcome to Simply Superior, Allison and Megan.
Great to be here.
Yes, Robin. Thanks for the invitation.
So, how bad is it? Putting salt on the roadway isn't anything new, and it's something we only do in the winter, though around here, winter lasts a pretty long time. But does it really make that much of a difference?
So this is Allison, and I would say it does. It does really matter. I know that in Wisconsin, we have over 40 water bodies right now that have been deemed impaired by the state of Wisconsin, by our Department of Natural Resources, because they have very high salt concentrations. The concentrations of salt have gotten so high that they are stressing out the systems of freshwater organisms, like, you know, fish, all the way down to tiny little zooplankton that live in those waters. And we're seeing these impacts. You mentioned we just put salt down in the winter, right? So can't those water bodies kind of flush themselves out and reset? But at this point, since we have been putting salt down for decades, we've actually begun to salt our groundwater. And so even in those non-winter months, when we're not putting salt down on roads, groundwater recharge is replenishing lakes and streams with salty water.
Mm-hmm. And how much of it is a problem from major roadways, or does the salt on our driveway really make that much of a difference?
This is Megan, and I think what's great about what Allison's saying is that she's talking about like a statewide perspective, and I guess I'd like to bring in a local citywide perspective. I did some chloride monitoring last winter and a little bit this winter, and we saw our baseline reading last year into February a drastic change in the chloride levels. Saxon Creek is the creek we're sampling on, and it's unfortunately, it's one of those very urbanized streams, so there's a lot of parking lots that drain to it and roadways that it's either driving over, or there's storm drains directly outletting to it and neighborhoods, so it's receiving, there's a lot of water, stormwater runoff coming from our city and entering that stream, and stormwater is one of the leading causes to surface water pollution. And so we're seeing that in our streams during the winter. We're exceeding the chronic limits of chloride. So whether it's from the driveways or the roads, I'd say a little bit of A, a little bit of B. The jury's still out. We haven't done enough research to know exactly where it's coming from.
This is Allison, and I would add that we know that salt is coming from municipal, you know, operations as well mm-hmm. as private contractors and residential homes. And I think we all have to look at, you know, what is our role? What can we do? The City of Superior has really taken a holistic look at their winter maintenance and try to dial in, you know, with their operations, what can they do to reduce total salt use. And I think as citizens in the area, you know, we do want to be able to drive our cars down the road, and we do appreciate the use of some salt, right? It is an effective de-icer. It helps keep our road surfaces safer in the winter. But can we, you know, rethink what our demands are? Do we need to drive out, you know, to Target in the middle of the snowstorm? Can we hold off on some of those trips? Give the plow operators time. So anything that we can do to kind of relieve the pressure on those individuals is really important.
Well, I want to drill down into what we can do and maybe some alternatives. But first, I want to go back a little more to the science of it. Salt is a natural, it naturally occurs. Granted, not necessarily where you want it to be. And again, it doesn't naturally occur right in your driveway. But is it that bad, or is it the particular type of salt that we've perfected to de-icing?
I would say that in Wisconsin, we have very, very low concentrations of salt naturally in our water. So from 0 to 10 milligrams per liter. And what we're seeing now, after decades of putting tons of rock salt down on our roads and parking lots, is we are seeing salt concentrations climb into the tens and into the hundreds. And even in our more urbanized parts of both Wisconsin and Minnesota, around the Twin Cities, around Madison, Milwaukee, into the thousands of milligrams per liter. So we are just astronomically increasing the concentrations of salt in water bodies that should have very, very little salt in it. So it's not necessarily the type of salt. Salt like sodium chloride, rock salt, sometimes if you buy a what might be termed an environmentally friendly de-icer, there really aren't any environmentally friendly de-icers unless we don't use them. They might have some other chlorides, magnesium chloride, calcium chloride, some acetates, but anything that you put down, it's making its way into our water, and it's a pollutant.
And affecting fish, I assume.
Yeah, so affecting fish, salt reduces their rate of growth, the rates of reproduction. It also really negatively impacts zooplankton, which eat algae. So as salt concentrations increase, our water will get more green and murkier.
Right. And we call it fresh water for a reason. Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Wisconsin Saltwise Coordinator Allison Madison and Megan Hochfeld, the City of Superior's Water Resources Specialists. We're talking about Salt Awareness Week. So what can we do? You said, well, don't go to Target, although nothing wrong with Target in particular. Don't go to Walmart either if you can help it. But is there anything we can put on the driveway? Because even if I don't go anywhere and I just go outside to get the mail or something, I don't want to fall. That is going to be, you know, another issue and quite serious.
This is Megan. And Allison, I've heard you say this, and I love that you say this, and I think there's no silver bullet for winter maintenance practices specifically to help from slips. I think the main thing we have been focusing on, I think this year specifically, is like not to tell people to eliminate the salt use, but to reduce it and to have like a smart salting or a salt-wise plan set in place. For example, we encourage people to use 12 ounces, like a 12-ounce mug, to treat 20 feet. So measure out your sidewalk or your driveway, and for every 20 feet, you can treat it with 12 ounces or about 10 sidewalk blocks. And then the other thing that we've been encouraging people to do is to switch from salt to sand at 15 degrees Fahrenheit, because that commonly used road salt kind of stops working when it gets colder than 15 degrees. And sand is has different properties than salt, so it can really help with that traction. We're also encouraging people to use birdseed, because then you're also feeding the birds or the furry little critters and providing some traction.
So 15 degrees, you're talking about 15 degrees above zero, which we rarely get around here, Fahrenheit, right?
True. Unfortunately, true.
In that case, we should never have to use salt, right? But seriously, if I go to the store, I look at the package and it says good to 20 below or something like that. Is that misleading?
I'll let you take
that. Yeah, I'll jump in there, Robin. So this is Allison, and I would tell people that unfortunately there are no truth in labeling laws around de-icers. So people can say they work down to negative 20. They can say that they're pet safe, but they can still just be salt, or they can be other salts. And I would not trust those labels, unfortunately.
All right. But for the sake of journalism, ethics, and equal time, I will invite representatives of manufacturers who can support those claims to come on the show and make their case. Continue.
I would add one thing. That would be to shovel first.
Yes.
Shovel, get as much snow up as you can mechanically with your, or use your snowblower. That's fine too. So shovel first, then scatter, as she said, using salt just as needed, then switch if it's below 15. So shovel, scatter, switch, kind of those three S's. And if you do happen to over apply salt, the fourth S would be sweep. So sweep that extra salt up and you can reuse that.
One technique that I do is I try to saw it around high noon. In other words, right before the sun really comes out, assuming the sun does come out, which is, you know, sometimes doesn't happen for weeks around here. But seriously, it seems to aid each other.
Yep. So salt's just going to be more effective when it's warmer. So if you're putting just a little bit down when the sun's beating down on that is going to help.
All right. And throughout the week, you've had webinars and all sorts of aspects of salt use, overuse, the science behind it.
So if you've missed the salt awareness webinars, you want to learn a little bit more, everything is archived on YouTube. And we also have a couple training classes that are coming up, both for municipal plow operators, as well as one for private contractors, facilities managers, anybody who works in the world of winter maintenance. So those are free classes that are available. We just encourage everyone to visit our website, and that is wisaltwise.com.
Megan?
Robin, you've been talking about the Lake Superior Ice Festival. I'd like to also mention what I'll be doing at the Lake Superior Ice Festival on Saturday, January 29th. We have a community art collaborative where volunteers can fill up balloons, freeze them, and then contribute those ice orbs to a Lake Superior sculpture, and we're going to light it up. In addition to that, we have a kind of smart salting table. We'll have a water wheel, we'll have prizes, and we'll be stationed next to a City of Superior sander, like a sanding truck. And an operator will be there. It'll be kind of like a touch the truck opportunity for kids to learn more about what the trucks do, also learning what we just talked about today, how to keep our waterways clean and safe and reduce salt we apply on the roads and sidewalks.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Wisconsin Saltwise Coordinator Allison Madison and Megan Hochfeldt, the City of Superior's Water Resources Specialist. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Coming up, the latest album from Eddie Ojard. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Last August, we journeyed to Two Harbors for the celebration of the 125th birthday of the tugboat, the Edna G. Offering a musical tribute to the landmark, or shall we say watermark, was Eddie Ojard, who has a connection as the grandson and great-grandson of some of the Edna G's captains, as well as a few generations of seafarers on the North Shore, Duluth, and Superior. Eddie shared with us selections from his third album, and now he has a fourth, which, if you think is no big deal, is one because he was just about to celebrate his 13th birthday when we last spoke 6 months ago. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Edward Ojard.
Hello. Hi.
Last time you told us your family has operated several tugboats, and not just the Edna G., and that another is the Edward H.
Yep.
Who might that have been? And who might have been named for, and who may be named for it?
Yeah, well, it's named after my grandpa. He was Edward H. Ojard, Edward Harvey Ojard. And funnily enough, my name is Edward Ho Ojard.
Yes, and when I asked you which was your favorite tug, you didn't have any trouble coming up with that one.
Yeah. No, I like them all, but of course, you know, Edward H., you know.
Right. So your new album is called Minnesota.
Yep.
Your last one was Two Harbors.
Yep.
And I don't know the other two. Were they place names also?
No. So like the first one was called Butterfly Dances. I wrote that when I was 8. And pretty much the whole inspiration behind that one now is just like, you know, we live out in the country. So I see a lot of wildlife and nature and all that fun stuff. And I always was interested in like the butterflies and how they were flying around, almost like dancing, you know. So I decided to create an album just about that, you know, butterfly dances.
Hmm.
Now, my second CD was called Season. My inspiration for that was, you know, Antonio Vivaldi. He's a composer back in the day. He did his own set called Seasons, kind of famous.
A little bit, yep.
Yeah, and I thought, I could do that too, you know. So I pretty much made Seasons, and it's kind of related to Two Harbors. Like, I use a lot of Two Harbors at, like, how the seasons are and how we get them up in Minnesota pretty vividly. And then my third CD, Two Harbors, is, of course, about my hometown. Kind of just wanted to do a CD about, you know, where I live. And then my fourth CD, Minnesota, is just an expansion on the idea. So instead of doing my hometown, it's my home state.
We're speaking with pianist and composer Edward Ojard of Two Harbors, Minnesota, who has a new album out, his fourth, titled Minnesota. So you just spoke of being influenced by Antonio Vivaldi, the famous composer. Sort of the opposite of you. You're a young person, a prodigy, I would say. And Vivaldi actually composed all those concerti for young people like yourself. He was a teacher at, by the way, this is one of few composers I actually know something about. So don't worry, there won't be a test. But he taught at a school for wayward girls or something, or foundling girls, and each one of them would specialize in an instrument, and he wrote those concerti to as practice, really homework for them to do. Who else are your influences? And I hear something in one of your pieces, but tell me first, so what other composers from classical times or maybe current?
So here's the thing. I write a lot. I use this form that is very modern. It's in all, like, all these pop songs. So you hear like this A theme and then this B theme, and then you go back to the A theme, but then you also go back to the B theme, and then you have this totally new section, and then you finish off with a theme before, whichever one it is, the A or B theme. So I'd say that would be pretty modern, because that's like the style you hear in all the songs nowadays on the radio. For pretty much my other composer inspirations would just pretty much be classical musicians, like, you know, Chopin, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, all that fun stuff.
Well, as you just described your the different themes and everything, the one that I thought I heard some reminiscence of was in your song on the latest album, Song of the Loon.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds a bit like Eric Satie.
Oh, yeah.
Except he may have had an A, B, A, B, and then suddenly a Q.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Satie without the Q, perhaps. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly right.
And I'm not suggesting you don't do the Q.
Well, that's what I like, too, is like each CD is a little different. I try to make it, you know, better than the last, you know, adding some kind of new thing. So being my fourth CD, Minnesota, you know, it'd have to be quite a bit different, so I always try new things.
All right. Well, let's hear one of those new things. This is Song of the Loon by Edward Ojard.
Thank you.
And that was Song of the Loon by Edward Ojard from his fourth album, Minnesota. Eddie is 13 and a half from Two Harbors, Minnesota. We were talking about your influences in classical people. Anybody current or more contemporary?
I kind of just try my own thing, but like I said, the pop music nowadays, I use their form because that's pretty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do that a lot, but if I had a specific artist, I don't really know. I mean, I don't really listen to a lot of people specifically, so.
Mm-hmm. And refresh us on how long you've been playing, how you picked up the piano. Well, you didn't pick up a piano, but you sat down at a piano.
Yeah, so, you know, I started playing piano since I was 3 years old. And how I started is a mystery. I guess my mom had a keyboard, electric keyboard, pretty much we have in our living room there. And I just thought it was interesting when I was three and started playing a little bit here and there, just like doodling on there. And then I started to do it pretty much every day because I really liked it. And then that just kind of took off from there. We had lessons and then it just kind of grew from there. And the composing mm-hmm. part was pretty much when I was 4 years old, I just took out a bunch. I asked my mom if she had any staff paper because that's what you write the music for piano. I just wrote a bunch of things that may not make sense, but again, that too grew because I learned a little bit more about that and actually figured out how to do it decently. So, you know.
Wait a minute. Does she actually have staff paper lying around? That's not something most people have unless they are composers.
Yeah, so I think my mom kind of, you know, was picking up on my music deal. So I think my mom, and also my mom also took piano lessons back then.
Okay.
So she had, of course, a keyboard and then some theory things. So I think my mom could have had some staff paper lying around too.
Well, I'm glad she did.
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly.
At what age did you start taking lessons and when did they get really serious?
Well, you know, I actually don't know here. I know I've had three teachers so far from three to now, which I'm 13. But if you want to say when it got real serious, I'd say about a year ago. Because I started taking lessons with this doctor in music at St. Scholastica. And I also really enjoy having those serious lessons because, you know, I also want to excel in pretty much my composing and stuff, but that's also my core, which is classical and, you know, doing competitions and stuff. That's what I want mm-hmm. to excel in too.
Who have you been studying with at Scholastica?
Dr. Nicholas Susi, S-U-S-I. Mm-hmm.
We've had him on the show with Jennifer Lean as a soprano.
Oh, cool. Yeah. He's pretty awesome. He's been a very good teacher. I really like having listened to him.
Does he tell you anything that you're doing wrong? Not to be critical, but I mean, that's what teaching is all about, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, he had a lot of his ideas on how I could improve. And I totally agree because the way he does music is way different than when I did it. I had no concept of what the sound could really be because before, you know, I could play anything and not mine, but Dr. Nick helped tune my ears into hearing whether the sound was sharp, whether the sound was, you know, too light or the keys not getting down to the bottom of the piano kind of deal, like thinking about how you're attacking the key and then how to do it physically too, like what part of the arm are you using? Are you using the wrist, the forearm, or the shoulder? You know, there's a lot of tiny little concepts, but man, there's something else.
We are speaking with pianist and composer Edward Ojard of Two Harbors, who is 13 years old and has his fourth album out, Minnesota. Let's take a listen to another cut from the album.
I think we should listen to one of my favorite songs in there, and it's called Twin Cities. It's very different from the song Balloon. It's quick, upbeat, and I hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
was Twin Cities by Edward Ojard off his latest album, Minnesota. Edward is from Two Harbors. He is 13 years old, and he's already come up with his fourth album. How do you deal with being a prodigy? And of course, I ask that question knowing perfectly well that no one can answer anything about how do you deal with being what you are, right? I mean, you don't have any other reality. It's not like last week you weren't a prodigy, you know. But are you tired of questions about your age? And have you thought about what life might be like when age no matter matters, you know, when it catches up to you? In other words, when you're 25 years old, it's like, well, okay, yeah, you know, there's nothing special about it.
Well, you know,
I asked about three questions in there.
Yeah, I'll answer as much as I can here. But for the age deal, it doesn't really matter for me. I mean, Some might say, you know, prodigy, but I mean, I have other kids that are my age and can do, you know, concertos and all bigger stuff. So I'm really not that, I'm, you know, I try to stay low to the ground, and that's what my parents taught me. That's very important. I don't want to get over my head and then I'm going to crash. I can always do better. That's why in my CDs, I try to make it better than last. So I just keep working.
All right. Where can we find out more about your music?
Online. You can find me on Facebook as Edward H. Ojard. You can find me on my website. It's edward-h-ojard.com.
Great. And how about one more cut from the album to take us out?
Yeah, I think I got a real good song. This one is like my favorite of all the pieces I've written. It's called Minnesota Rhapsody, and if you guys don't know what Rhapsody means, I'll let you know here. Rhapsody is pretty much, you know, like a song, but it has a bunch of different genres, and just each time that you do it, it's a little different, has something different about it, like a different genre, different style, different rhythm, and yeah, so that's pretty much what Rhapsody means. But this is my favorite piece, and it's called Minnesota Rhapsody.
All right. And thank you for joining us, Eddie.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Danielle Cady, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
Our regular colleague, Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune, is off today. So, Danny, this time you and I will have to handle all the news ourselves, if you think we can manage it.
Yeah, I'll try to fill in as best I can, Robin.
All right. Well, there's a new development from the Biden administration about precious metals mining near the Boundary Waters.
Yeah, on Wednesday, the Biden administration basically canceled a move by former President Donald Trump to renew mineral rights leases for the proposed Twin Metals copper nickel mine. Back in 2020, former President Trump declared a national emergency over the country's reliance on imported metals. And so he signed an order basically renewing those leases. And now this is a reversal by the Biden administration. And it comes after a decision in October, too, where they were going to move forward with a study that could essentially lead to a 20-year ban on mining upstream from the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Twin Metals, though, is not discouraged by this decision. They think it's political and that they're going to continue to move forward on what they say are their rights to defend those mineral rights. And people who are following this also know that there's the proposed Polymet mine. Just this week, environmental groups and the Fond du Lac band filed another lawsuit challenging that project. And a court ruled this week that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency had to consider groundwater discharge as part of a permit for that project. So, you know, it's a very contentious issue. People are very fond of the Boundary Waters and see it as a pristine area, and they don't want it to be negatively impacted by development.
All right. Well, speaking of pure, clear, pristine waters, you've got an update on the idea of bottling water on the Wisconsin side.
Yeah, there was a new report that came out this week from Northland College in Ashland about ways to protect artesian wells in Bayfield County following a controversial proposal there to bottle and sell water from an artesian well that's now being fought in court. Residents and tourists have been drawn to the region's artesian wells because they don't require pumping. It's kind of considered pretty unique or special because water naturally flows to the surface. So the paper released this week by the Mary Griggs Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation made four recommendations for Bayfield County, including mapping their artesian aquifer, possibly having officials declare it a special area of concern once they've mapped it, looking at adopting new zoning regulations, and also suggesting that the state consider a water management framework like Minnesota. This is all happening because the county is facing litigation in Barron County Circuit Court right now over its denial of a special land use permit for Duluth-based water startup Crystal Clear, or Crystal KLR. And, you know, the debate surrounding this proposal by Crystal Myshak, the company's founder, has really brought up this issue of what is the artesian resource in this area and how would it be impacted if a company like Crystal's was able to tap that resource. You know, with Crystal Myshak's proposal, she's wanting to capture and sell water from an artesian well on property that she and her father own in Herbster. And then that water would be trucked to Superior to be bottled and sold. But it's a fairly small proposal compared to other water withdrawals in Wisconsin that have drawn scrutiny because they would collect anywhere between 100,000 gallons or more per day. So this paper provides some options for county officials of steps that they could possibly take if they wanted to protect their artesian wells.
All right. You know, I think I'll make a little clarification here that Crystal Clear, the water bottling company, is not the same as Crystal Clear, the ice sculptors, who we mentioned earlier in the show. Going back to federal actions affecting the region, we might be looking at a boost in infrastructure money.
Yeah. Last week, there was an announcement that the Great Lakes region is going to receive a huge infusion of funding as part of $14 billion awarded through the Biden administration's bipartisan infrastructure law. And so one of the big projects that would benefit this region and the Great Lakes region is a $479 million award for building a new lock at the Sioux Locks at Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. You know, the Army Corps has been working on this project to complete a $1.5 billion new lock for a long time now. And this provides another option to the aging Pollock that can handle 1,000-foot ships that haul iron ore and other cargo from the port of Duluth Superior to the Lower Lakes. And, you know, here in the port, they see around 35 million tons of cargo that move through each year, and iron ore makes up more than half of that. So the Duluth Seaway Port Authority has said that they see this as a really critical infrastructure project, and I believe the Army Corps is planning to award a construction project for that new lock next month, and then they're hoping to begin construction sometime this summer.
All right. On the ever-present COVID front, the pandemic is affecting teachers, but not just your regular classroom teacher, but substitutes.
Yeah, and you know, with COVID-19 cases once again surging during the pandemic because of the Omicron variant, schools in Wisconsin have been scrambling to find enough substitute teachers. And I shouldn't say just Wisconsin. Obviously, this is a nationwide problem. But they've all been having trouble trying to cover for teachers who are out quarantining or sick. And the Superior School District in particular Superintendent Amy Starzecki has said recently that their ability to fill those positions has gradually been decreasing, and that the last 2 weeks have been their worst weeks in 2 years. And, you know, generally for the Superior School District, their coverage rate when teachers are out absent and they're able to get substitutes, that's at around 75% right now. And that's down from 80% several years ago. And Starzecki and other staff and administrators and school board members have all jumped in to help. But, you know, it's contributing to burnout among a lot of the staff and the teachers because, you know, teachers in particular, they end up missing their prep time period that they need to get ready for their class. There is one bright spot, though, that Starzecki said that they've gotten 30 new substitute applications since rolling out a campaign to attract new subs. And, you know, there was information put out this week by Mayo Clinic that says their models show Wisconsin may have reached its peak with the Omicron variant. So hopefully there's some relief in sight in terms of the virus spreading and, you know, how it's affecting people with them being out sick or quarantining.
It would be great if we reached our peak, but I think we heard that before. So. Well, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Eddie Ojard. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.